is Diana Plopa. I am the associate publisher at Grey Wolf Publishing. And today we are featuring The Innkeeper's Adventure. It's a children's fairy tale written by Thomas K. Tabor. Unfortunately, Thomas cannot be with us today, so his editor, Shelby Smith, will be doing reading, and we'll have a little conversation with Shelby after her reading. Take it away, Shelby.
There was once in the land of Nod an ugly old ogre. The ogre was easily 9 feet tall, with short, bushy hair and a heavy black beard. He had one blue eye and one green one, and was slightly cross-eyed for want of a good pair of glasses. His nose was crooked, where it had been broken in two places, and his mouth showed a dozen and a half sharp, pointed teeth. You must know, dear reader, that the ogre clothed himself in only a single bear skin, which he obtained from an old bear by squeezing it to death with his own powerful arms. Mm-hmm. If you must ever go to the land of Nod, try very hard to follow my advice and go through Michigan and cross the sky-blue desert with beautiful oases once every 100 miles until you come to Shamu at the western end. Careful, for if you go by the way of Kansas, you may get lost in the land of Oz. This is what happened to some friends of mine, but that is another story. In Shamu Forest, there lived a very beautiful witch who practiced white magic and ruled all over the woodland creatures. All the animals loved her because she was a good witch, for she was none other than the Princess Lachat. One day, a poor but honest innkeeper named Thomas Shadwell went traveling through Shamu Forest in search of adventure. He had turned over the running of his inn to his two sons the day before and was taking a well-earned rest. When Princess Lachat spied him through her crystal ball coming towards her marble castle, she summoned her two most trusted aides, Footloose the Fox and Toady the Frog. She said to them, "About a mile from here, you will find a young man asleep under my magic pear tree. I have caused him to sleep so that he may not pass without stopping here, for I must make use of him." "We hear and will obey," said Footloose. "We shall do as you wish," said Toady. They both scampered off willingly, and in less than no time, they found the innkeeper. "Who are you?" Tom asked in surprise upon being awakened by a fox and a frog. "I'm Toady the butler," replied the frog. "Footloose the footman at your service," said the fox with a polite bow. "What have we here? A talking fox and frog? I've never heard of animals talking before," exclaimed Tom. "All of us in the magic forest of Shamu can talk," was the fox's quick reply. "Quick, you must follow us to the palace of our mistress, Princess Lachat," croaked Toady. "Why?" inquired the innkeeper. The fox told him not to ask questions just yet, and all would be explained. So Tom went with him through the woods to the grand palace of the pretty sorceress. What a palace it was, too. The whole castle was made of marble, with great marble columns supporting the roof on all sides. Two tall gold spires graced the top at either end, and in all of the rooms, the walls were hung with silk tapestries and drapes. All were done in luscious blues, reds, yellows, greens, and lavenders. The most beautiful of all was the throne room in the middle of the palace. There were mirrors on all the walls and a lovely chandelier of the purest crystal hung from the ceiling and reflected the light from 1,000 directions. On a sapphire throne amid all this splendor sat the lovely Princess Lachat, and Tom stood in awe of what he saw as he beheld the beautiful witch. "Come closer," she mewed softly, "so you may see me better and so that I may speak to you easier, Thomas Shadwell." "How do you know my name?" stammered Tom. "In the forest all things are known to me. Thomas, I knew your name the moment you entered the mystic forest of Shamu, and I also know that you are free to help me fight the evil ogre."
Thank you very much. So that's just the beginning of this wonderful fairy tale that Thomas created. He wrote it approximately 42 years ago, tucked it in a drawer, and his niece was 12 at the time, and she did the illustrations. He brought the book to us approximately 8 months ago, mm-hmm. and we put it together. Shelby worked with Tom to create the text and to fine-tune it and edit it down, and then we put it all together. So, Shelby, tell me a little bit about how that editorial process went with Tom.
So, with Tom, it was a little bit more of a special case. We went and met with him personally rather than doing most of the work over emails and on the computer, which I think was a great way for me to better get to know him and how he wanted his story to be told. And so I went over the edits first on my own, and then we went over them with him, and then I did a second round of edits. But really, I think that the final copy is extremely similar to the original one that he submitted.
And it truly is. He really told an amazing story, and with such really wonderful visuals and the characters he created, talking animals and princesses and ogres, it really turned out well. Was there anything for you in the editing process, Shelby, that really stuck out for you when about the story when you were putting it together? Is there a scene or a character that really struck you more than the others?
I honestly loved the toad and the fox. They were fun, and I think like the kind of characters that children would love to read, because what kid doesn't like talking animals? And when going through the editorial process, because he wrote it 42 years ago, and I'm rather younger, some of the language was vastly different than how I would phrase it now, which was kind of fun to then, like, going through the editorial process, discuss that with him, and, like, he would never have heard the way that I would have said it originally, and I had no idea how he was doing it, so it was pretty fun.
The difference in language was
the age,
new for you.
The age gap.
Yeah. Okay, do we have any questions from the audience, Sarah?
I just wanted to comment, though, that the language that he uses now, knowing that you helped him with editorial, the language part, but it just, he speaks in fairy tale ease.
Yes, he does.
Right? I mean, just the way he phrases things and you know, it just is like a fairy tale that you've read. So I just think that's amazing.
Barry.
That was when I read Tom's book, and he takes you away into a fairy tale mindset. Your comment was, and I want to see how you look at it, because he spoke in a different type of writing mm-hmm. style. How would you compare yours to his? What do you see as different? Is it just the way we used words 42 years ago as opposed to today, or what did you see as the difference?
I think that, yes, my generation does use words differently, but I think that, like, the biggest change is that the way that we use the same type of language now is a lot more concise than it was. Like, it's down to less words. Like, we just shorten all of the phrases and make it less wordy, but we made some changes, we kept some, because, like, his whole point of his writing was to, like, immerse the reader in this fantasy world, as you said, which I think he did a fantastic job with.
I if I may go on,
mm-hmm.
words are like a song. Whether there are words in the song or not, it carries you along, it flows highs and lows, but that's what language does too. So, your opinion, if you shorten the sentences and the phrases and the communications you have with others in verbally or in print, are you losing that melodic flow?
Mm.
And does the beauty of language melt away?
I think yes and no. I think it depends on the specific situation and the way that something is used and the context in which you use it and the words themselves. I also am a writer, and sometimes I find that I am wordier than I need to be because it adds to the style and the beauty of the writing, because I agree with you, writing is art, and
right.
I mean, I love words, but sometimes there's also things where if you use more words than you absolutely need to, I feel that sometimes it may weaken your point with your writing, so sometimes more concise is better, but I also think that by using more words, sometimes it can make the writing more beautiful.
So, any more questions from the audience? So, Shelby, tell us a little bit about you. I know that, you know, yes, you work for Grey Wolf Publishing as, you started out as an intern for us, and then we
mm-hmm.
graduated you to an editor because your work is superlative. I'm so
you.
Blessed to have you with our company. Can you tell me a little bit, I know that you took a trip to Costa Rica?
I did. This past summer I went for a 8-day trip to Costa Rica with my father and one of my good friends. It was a mission trip, and we went with my church. It was a rather large group of people, around 50 of us, and we split into three teams. There was one at a kids center, there was a medical team, and a construction team. I myself participated with the construction team, and we went into one of just the most poverty-stricken neighborhoods in the area, and we built a house in 4 days from scratch. And, of course, it was quite small compared to what we are used to here, but for that family, it was everything. And it was just such an amazing experience to see how something that might seem like no big deal to us can just be the world to them. And the people there have, like, so much less than what we are used to here, but they are happier.
Mm-hmm.
And it was amazing to see.
So while you were there, you also wrote for the newsletter for the church.
I did do that.
Can you tell me? Tell me a little bit. Explain to our audience here a little bit about how you had time to build a house and then also report on what you were doing there. How did you find time to do the lyrical writing for that newsletter that you were able to achieve?
I did not sleep much.
Yeah.
So we would get up pretty early and have breakfast and go to the construction site and stay there. We would leave before it got dark because that would be quite dangerous. And then sometimes I would write on the bus rides because we had pretty long commutes from, we were staying in a rather nice hotel, fortunately. And then the hotel had Wi-Fi, and so I would stay up after dinner and work on it. And it was definitely not a chore for me. I love getting to write and then sharing the amazing things that we were all experiencing with people at home was wonderful. And when we got back to the hotel, we met with the other two groups from the trip, and we all shared our personal experiences from the day, so I got to like get a closer look inside what's happening in the rest of the trip, and then also try to share that in the newsletter as well.
I think you did an excellent job. I really enjoyed reading those articles.
Thank you.
I'm glad that you shared those with us. One last question. Where do you see your writing taking you career-wise? If you lived in a utopian environment, as far as your writing goes, how would you like to see that develop?
I think that my dream that may or may not be obtainable would to be a best-selling author. I'm currently working on a high fantasy and adult novel, and I would like to get it published. I want to pursue a writing career, but I also am thinking about having a career in either publishing or civil rights law. So writing would perhaps be my hobby as it is now, because my job is school, and so I write when I have free time. And for me, it's kind of an escape from like the stress of real world, and so I do it whenever I can.
Excellent. Okay, any last questions for Shelby?
Just a comment if I could. I just like the idea that I don't know which would be your fiction writing, or well, would you say fantasy adult?
It is, yeah.
And then writing for civil rights movements, or what would you say that would be, more commercial or?
There's so much writing in law, which is part of why it attracts me.
I just think that's such a great idea, because we need people with skills to be able to express whatever message, you know, in that area, the civil rights movement or other important movements. Then also getting to do what you love as well. So you're making a difference, a real difference in the world, and then also getting to enjoy your life, your dreams.
That is the hope.
Yeah.
Barry.
Civil rights?
Yes.
What exactly would you be writing about?
Well, for that, you have to do casework. You have to work on your, for the law, like, I mean, I don't have experience in the career because I'm still schooling. But, like, you know, you have to write your arguments. You have to submit, like, litigation papers and stuff like that. So I would be, like, writing more, not creatively, more informatively about cases. I'm still in high school, so I'm not exactly sure where I'm going yet, but that's my thought.
Yeah.
That's where your comment led me to think that you're going to into this. You could be a civil rights.
I would want to be an attorney, yes.
An attorney. Okay, so, okay.
Yeah.
Understood.
Shelby is one of our miracle editors. Shelby is this year just finishing her junior year at high school, and she'll be a senior next year. And Shelby is such an exemplary writer, and she's such a fastidious editor. She catches things that sometimes I miss. So that's why we hired her as an editor, because we don't discriminate on age one way or the other. So we wanted to give Shelby the opportunity to do this, and we're just so grateful that she's so gifted and talented. So
I am grateful for the opportunity.
I appreciate you being with us. Thank you again for reading for
yes,
Tom.
Of course.
I'm sorry you couldn't make it today. Again, Tom's book, Thomas K. Tabor, The Innkeeper's Adventure, and you can find it on Amazon, on Kindle, and of course through Great Wolf Publishing. Thank you, Shelby.